Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook Member Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Oh, the belief clearings. On with the belief clearings. We have limiting belief expert Lion Goodman on the line. How you doing, Lion?
I am great, Jordan. So happy to be back.
Thank you so much for doing these, Lion. I do appreciate it as someone who's consuming the belief clearings myself, but also just to help spice up this podcast and add another tool with which we can help the Lifebook members. I do appreciate all the work you're putting in, and I'm sure my listeners do too, so thank you.
You are welcome. I'm all about practical tools that actually work to help you change your life. That's all my work.
I like that a lot. Listen, Spiritual Month. I figure that this is the best time for the listeners to get to know Lion a little bit and get to know your story. I think a lot of people don't really know your incredible backstory. So if you could share with the listeners the incredible events that happened to you, but then also how it's kind of shaped you and your beliefs as you've moved on with your life.
I'd be happy to share that story. It's potent. It's been published widely internationally. It was in a best-selling book. It's been the subject of many blogs. I've been on Japanese TV with it, and also there was a movie made, an award-winning movie made based on the story. So it is a good story. I've had my 45 minutes of fame, but it's still a good story, and I still get comments from all over the world.
Yeah, my listeners would love to hear it, man.
Yeah. So here's where it starts. When I was in college, I discovered my own spirituality. I began studying what everybody was studying back in the 70s, spiritual teachers, gurus, Eastern philosophy. And from an intellectual perspective, I was pretty solid. I was really interested in everything. By the way, can you hear that airplane in the background? Because I can.
I cannot. Go
okay,
ahead.
Good. All right.
Or you can start over.
Yeah. I'll just start from college. So when I got to college, I discovered spirituality, and I began exploring it, like most people in the 70s, as widely as I could, through the use of drugs and through the use of gurus and
right.
books and spiritual teachers and workshops and yoga. And so I was pretty much a spiritual fly guy. Anything that looked the least spiritual, I was interested in it. And it was all at the intellectual level. I wanted to understand spirituality. And with my background in my own religion, which was Judaism, I was trying to figure out how to compare the two, how to work with the two. And it was all pretty much mental masturbation, we could call it, if you don't mind my use of that term. I was playing around with the concepts, and it was interesting, and I was having a good time. After college, I graduated with a degree in consciousness studies, so I was already interested in neurology and psychology and like that, philosophy, linguistics. But I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what I was going to do with a degree in consciousness studies. Nobody was hiring people with degrees in
right.
consciousness studies. And so I just got a job that I could. I became a traveling salesman. And I was traveling around in a van that was fitted out like an RV. And I was traveling from state to state, from Colorado out to California. And along the way, I became a traveling road guy. If I saw somebody whose car had broken down or had a problem, I would stop and help them. I was just a nice guy being on the road. So I had just spent a couple weeks in Las Vegas, had a successful time selling stuff. I was selling jewelry and gift items, that kind of thing. And I was heading toward LA, and I was passing through the Mojave Desert. And I saw a car that had broken down, and the guy was staring into his engine with a blank look on his face. And I thought, well, I could stop and help him. It was about 110 degrees outside, and so I knew he needed help. So I pulled over, and I said, "You need some help?" He said, "Yeah, I just put $200 into this car, and now it's dead. I don't know what to do." And I said, "Well, I'm heading into L.A. Do you want a ride?" And he looked at me kind of funny, and then he said, "Yeah, sure." And he went and he got his duffel bag and other bags of his stuff, and he brought it into my van, and we began traveling together. Well, I'm going to shortcut the story because it's written in more detail, and we'll give the link down at the bottom of this broadcast. He ended up traveling with me for 3 days, and over those 3 days, I was nice to him. I was giving him clothes and giving him things to read, and he was doing errands for me as I would go into stores and sell my wares. And the third night out, we were camped out in this place east of L.A. called Claremont. It's where the Claremont Colleges are. And we were at a place called Puddingstone Reservoir, which was a park. And there was nobody around. I was in the back of the van trying to move stuff around, and he was in the front of the van listening to music. And all of a sudden, there's this explosion. And I felt something hit me on the top of the head, and I thought at first that the gas stove had exploded. And so I looked up at the gas stove. It was intact. And then I looked to my left to Ray, and there he was with his arm propped up on the back seat with a gun in his hand.
Wow.
And I realized I had been hit by a bullet. And my first impulse was to say, what the hell? But then my second impulse was to say, oh, he's warning me. He's going to take my stuff. And at that moment, I realized I didn't need stuff. All I wanted to do was stay alive. And if he had put me naked outside in the desert and driven away with my van, that would have been fine. And I relaxed back and I said, take it, it's all yours. And I don't know if he heard me, because the next thing I knew, there was another firing of the gun.
Oh my God.
And I realized, oh, he's not warning me. He's going to kill me. And what do you do at that moment? I was locked into position, completely defenseless, and it was inevitable what was about to happen. He had a gun full of bullets. I was a sitting duck, and I didn't know what to do, but I realized if I'm going to die, I don't want to die with anger or upset. I want to die in peace and love. And so I relaxed back, and I heard the words in my head, like someone speaking to me, relax and keep breathing.
Wow.
And so that's what I did. I relaxed and I continued to breathe. And I began thinking, okay, how do I want to die? What do I want to do? Well, I knew that I wanted to die without any regrets. So I began thinking about all the people I had hurt. And in kind of a fast reverse movie, I went through my life and thought about all the people I had hurt, and I asked for forgiveness. And then I also went through and forgave anyone that had hurt me, because I wanted to leave clean. I didn't want to leave with unfinished business. And I began reaching up to what I called God, the Great Spirit, and opened my heart and said, okay, I'm ready to come home. You know, come get me, because I knew that that was what's going to happen. And then he fired gun again.
Jeez.
And another shot rang out. And of course, my ears were whining from the sound. The second and third bullets missed me, but my body jerked. And at that point, I went, okay, I'm pretty close to getting out of here. So I began expanding out, and my consciousness was expanding in time and space. I was ready to die. I was ready to connect with the Creator. And as my consciousness expanded, I ended up as a single point of awareness floating above the van, so out-of-body experience, pretty classic. And as I was looking down, I could see the van and its contents, sort of like looking down into a doll's house and seeing all the rooms at once. And that was a pretty interesting perspective. It was like, whoa, that's interesting.
And, wow.
And it didn't have any emotional charges, not like, oh, I'm going to die or anything. It was just like, that's interesting. And about that point, and I was, you know, I was filled with light and love. Kind of golden light was glowing out of me. I felt like a searchlight. And then he shot again.
Jesus.
And at this point, my head was thrown violently to the side, and blood was spurting out and flowing down my head and onto my shoulders and my legs. And I was back in my body. And that was interesting to me, because I figured if I'm going to die, I'm going to leave my body.
Further and further from your body.
Yeah, right. And now all of a sudden I'm back in my body.
Oh, geez.
And there's all this blood, and I'm thinking, well, that's kind of weird. And so I'm looking around, I'm thinking, well, if the bullet went through my head, I ought to be able to see light coming through or something. So I'm kind
Jesus.
Of checking my body out. I had done a lot of body exercises and yoga and that kind of thing, so I knew my body pretty well. And I was kind of checking to see, well, there's got to be something missing here. You know, is it my perception? Is it my ability to move my body? Everything felt intact. I couldn't figure out how much I had been injured. And after checking everything and bleeding, I said, well, if I'm going to die, I want to look my killer in the eye. And so I picked my head up and I turned toward him and I just looked at him. Now, I was still filled with light and love. And so I just looked at him with light and love, because
oh
that's what I was made of at that moment. And he freaked out. he jumped up and he said, "Why aren't you dead, man? You're supposed to be dead." And I had no idea what the answer to that question was. So I just said, "Here I am." And he said, "I shot you 4 times, man. Why aren't you dead?" And I didn't have an answer for that one. And then he said, "It's too weird, man. It's too weird. It was just like my dream. Just like my dream this morning."
What?
And I thought, now that's interesting.
Whoa.
Who's writing this script? That was my next question.
Right.
Like, and so I said, "What dream?" And he said, "Oh, I was dreaming that I was shooting this guy, but he wouldn't die. It wasn't you in the dream. It was somebody else." And I thought, okay, this is out of my control. It's out of my imagination. I don't know what the hell's going on. But if I can keep him talking, maybe he won't kill me. And so I began to slowly ask him questions and trying to, you know, get him to calm down, because he was fully adrenalinated. He had just shot somebody and was, you know, he was full of adrenaline. He was bouncing around the van. And every time I tried to speak, he said, "Shut up, man, just shut up." And he was looking outside and trying to, you know, see if anybody would come. Well, we were out in the middle of nowhere. And if somebody had heard 4 shots ring out, they certainly wouldn't come investigate it. You know, so there was no help coming. I knew that. It was up to me. And so I began just as slowly as I could to try to talk to him. At one point, he sort of walked up to me and expressed concern. He said, "Well, does it hurt?" He was looking at my head trying to figure out why I wasn't dead. And I went, "Yeah, it hurts, but I think I'm going to be okay." And after a few more exchanges, he said, "Okay, man, I'm going to take you to a hospital I know."
Wow.
And I said, "Okay." And now something had shifted. Instead of being ready to kill me and wanting to kill me, he was now caring about me. And part of it, I think, was just because I was in that state of love and light, and there's no anger, and there was no, you know, blame, and there was no judgment. It was just, here we are in this situation, in this moment. And so I heard again, "Stay awake and keep breathing." And so that's what I did. He put some stuff around me so I couldn't move, went to the front of the van, pulled the van out, and started driving. And he drove for about an hour, and I had no idea where we were going. I didn't know, you know, it was dark outside. I didn't know LA that well. And I just trusted that I was either going to go to the hospital and it was going to be okay, or something even worse could happen. And it gave me an hour to really think about this whole 3 days I had spent with him, being nice to him. And all of a sudden he turns on me and tries to kill me. And after about an hour, the car pulls over and stops and the engine turns off. And I realized we are not at a hospital. There's no bright lights. There's no driveway. And there was this black silence. And at that point, he walked up to me with a gun in his hand. And he sat down on a bed next to me. And he said, I can't take you to a hospital, man. I have to kill you." And I thought, okay, well, here we are again. We're facing death, you know, and what's going to happen? And I said, "You know, why do you have to kill me, Ray?" And he said, "Because if I take you to the hospital that put me back in jail, I can't go back to jail." And I went, oh, not only am I dealing with someone who is crazy and has a gun in his hand, but he's an ex-con with a gun in his hand. I had no idea, right? So I began to slowly talk to him and said, "Well, maybe there's another way. I don't have to turn you in. Oh, yeah, they'll get me. They'll come after me. Well, I could drive myself to the hospital. No, as soon as you told them, they'd come get me." And so this began an 8-hour conversation.
Oh, my God.
Trying to figure out how we were going to get out of this situation together. And I kept making suggestions. He kept turning them down. But I figured if I can keep him talking, he won't pull that trigger again. And at one point, I said, "You know, I'm really uncomfortable. I've been sitting in the same crouched position for 6 hours. I said, I'd really like to get up and stretch." And he said, "Okay, but don't try anything funny." And I went, "Yeah, I'm not going to try anything funny here." Because I knew I was okay, but I didn't know how much strength I had. He was a pretty strong guy himself, and I didn't know if I could wrestle the gun away. My best effort was focused on just keeping him talking. So I got out of the van, stretched, and we were next to a pond. And so he kind of pointed down toward the pond, and I was walking down this embankment. And I figured, well, he could just shoot me in the back and push me into the pond. That was possible. But I felt impervious to bullets for some reason. I felt immortal. And so I bent down and I washed the blood off my face and hands. And by this time it had stopped dripping. And I stood up and I turned toward him. And at that moment, he kind of held the gun out to me. And he said, "What would you do if I gave you this gun?" And my first reaction was, "I'd throw it out there in the pond." And he looked at me quizzically and he said, "You wouldn't kill me?" I said, no, why should I kill you? You have your life, I have my life. And he said, you're not mad at me? I said, no, I'm not mad at you. He said, man, if somebody tried to do this to me, I'd be furious and I'd want to kill them. I said, well, that's not me, you know. And he said, you are the weirdest person I've ever met. And at that point, I knew I was probably the weirdest person he would ever meet.
Oh, my God.
And so we went back to the van and we continued our conversation. Now the sun had risen a little bit and I heard birds singing. It was the most beautiful sound I'd ever heard. Suddenly, I'm not dead. I'm actually alive. And we negotiated and negotiated and negotiated. And he started telling me the story of his past and how he grew up in poverty and all the drug deals that went bad and, you know, all the whole story. I got the whole story. And I was a deep listener. I was trying to find what's the way out of here. And finally, I made an offer. I said, look, Ray, if I will not turn you in, I promise I will not turn you in or report you to the police, if you promise never to do anything like this again. And after all those discussions and all those possibilities, he said, okay. And we shook hands. And we got back into the front seat of the van. He started driving. He drove to a place that he knew. And before he left the van, I gave him what money I had and some jewelry he could pawn. And we walked out together to the bus stop that we were near. And we shook hands. And I said, goodbye, Ray. And he looked at me really weirdly. And he said, goodbye. And I walked back to the van and drove myself to the hospital. Now, in the hospital, the surgeon, the ER surgeon, was, you know, scraping the bullets and metal and hair out of my scalp, and he said, you know, you got two bullets hit you, and they both glanced off your skull. Oh. You're a lucky man.
Yeah.
And I knew I was lucky. In fact, I thought I was blessed rather than luck. And I began a new life at that point from the perspective of I have a new life. I'm reborn. I didn't have to go through that whole diaper stage again. And I had a direct connection to spirit. I knew what spirit was from an experience point of view, not from the mental point of view. And that deepened my spirituality and really took my spiritual quest on down to the next level.
Wow, man. I don't know how you walk away from something with like that without having the belief that everyone's out to get me. Like, how did that affect your beliefs?
It really deepened my trust in God, in spirituality. And I don't care what you call God. You call it creator or great spirit or the thing that created everything or whatever. It doesn't matter to me. I recognize the deep connection I have to the universe. And as part of the universe, I have a particular perspective. I got to extraordinarily experience this flow of love and light through me and realize that it's not about me. It's really about something much bigger than me. And to me, that's what spirituality is. It's recognizing our divine connection, the connection we have with everything and everyone around us, and seeing ourselves as a part of the great creation, not as separate from it.
Mm.
So that began the next series of quests that I had. And strangely, the first thing I needed to do was get a job and get off the road.
Yeah.
I started interviewing for a job, and kind of a coincidence or an ironic situation is I got a job as a headhunter. This was after having my head hunted. So
wow.
I don't know how that happened, but that launched my career in headhunting, which lasted about 30 years.
Oh my gosh, man. It's a wild story. Let's touch on what you were just saying a second ago, which is establishing healthy beliefs when it comes to spirituality. But before that, where can listeners who want to read the whole story find it? Maybe they're just listening to the audio. Can you direct them on where to find your full story so they can read more?
Sure. My website is liongoodman.com, L-I-O-N, goodman.com. There's a tab with articles, and look for Lion's Near-Death Story, and you'll find it there. And you can also, after you read the article, you'll find a link to the movie that was made. It was a 20-minute short film made based on the story, loosely, but still powerfully.
Wow. And I just wanted to make sure to swing back around and touch on exactly what you said. It's important to establish religious beliefs, spiritual beliefs that are healthy to the individual. I think that everyone can agree with that, right? Like, we've seen spirituality in all sorts of different forms. We've seen religion in all sorts of different forms. But it's important for the individual to establish healthy spiritual beliefs, right?
Yes. Yes.
Because we don't choose the religion that we're born into.
True. So there's a difference between religion and spirituality. Religion is a codified spirituality. Somebody had a divine experience at some point, wrote it down or put it into a set of rules, and then said, these are the rules we're going to follow in order to be spiritual. Now, the problem with that is that it's gone from a direct experience of a connection to all and everything to an abstracted intellectualization about spirituality, about that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the formalized religions have the same issue, and that is that they have codified it, put it in a book, written it down, made a set of rules. And if you take on those rules, you'll have a good life, because all those religions aim us toward having a good life, living a good life, being a person of integrity and
right.
and kind and all the virtues that we talked about in our previous talk. However, it separates people from the direct experience of their own spirituality, their own spiritual connection to the universe. And so that's why people use drugs and try different religions. And you know, sometimes they'll swap one set of beliefs, of indoctrinated beliefs, for another. And say, well, I used to be a Christian, but now I'm a Jew. Or I used to be Jewish, but now I'm a Buddhist. But the real spirituality is when we practice and open ourselves directly, and we are focused on our pure experience. And that's what I'm going to do in the clearing processes. I'm going to try to give our listeners a direct experience of spirituality. That's where it happens, not in a book or a paragraph or a set of rules, but rather in the direct experience of life itself.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's something we see in the Lifebook community a lot is we get people who are born into a very strict religious environment, you know, one way or another. There's a million different versions of it, and it kind of confuses them and tangles them up, and they feel the need to untangle this, and they don't even know if they want to belong to this religion anymore, but they just want to find the truth. I kind of feel like they're pointing towards what you're talking about, which is getting back to the personal connection and the actual spirituality. So I'm excited for this clearing line, and I think that I think this will be impactful for the listener.
I agree. That's my intention. I've got a really good one set up, and I would love to share that with your listeners.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Lion. Everybody out there, thank you for listening. Without further ado, please enjoy this belief clearing. I'll see you next time on the Lifebook Podcast.
Welcome to the belief clearing session for Spiritual Month. This is Lion Goodman. To me, spirituality is about the ultimates in our life. Ultimately, who are you? How are you connected to everything around you? Where did it all begin? And where do you begin and end? An ultimate is a stopping point for any concept or description. We can't go any further. Universe, that's the ultimate word we have for all of space, time, energy, and matter. God, that's the ultimate word we use for the creator of everything, or the actual beingness of all and everything. The reason we're confused about words like God and soul and love and purpose is because everyone has their own conception and experience of what that ultimate is and what the word is pointing to. If you believe you're a separate, isolated self, an ego, an individual, disconnected from other people and from the world, you will suffer. Loneliness, isolation. And separation is one of the biggest delusions we suffer from. We think we're alone, but that is a fundamentally flawed belief. Ah, belief. Great word, isn't it? There's a lie inside every belief. You can see it there. It's right inside the word, L-I-E. Belief has lie inside it. So what is a belief? In my view, it's a container for a microscopic part of the universe, and then we hang on to it as if it's always inevitably true. If you could open your eyes to the real reality, you would be speechless. And speechless is where we have to go to see the real spiritual reality. Words are concepts, not experiences. The word is not the experience, any more than the map is not the territory. You can describe an orange, what it looks like, how it grows, its structure, color, and composition. You can even describe what it tastes like by comparing it to other things, but these are all mental exercises. Or you can eat an orange and experience what it tastes like directly. Last month we talked about virtues, and I said that the soul is made of virtues. Virtues are descriptions of us when we are at our best, who we are and how we act as caring, involved, active people who want to create happiness for ourselves and others, who want to create a better world. A virtue word such as kindness only points to the options you have in real moment-to-moment decisions and behaviors. Will I hold the door open for the person behind me or allow a person to cut in front of me in traffic? Or will I act with the selfish motives of protection or me first? These are specific behaviors and choices that we point to with a virtue word. And virtues are ultimately for the good. It's a pointer to a way of life, not a description of an actual behavior. Your virtues are your ultimate self operating in the world. Words are useful, and they're also limiting by their very nature and by necessity. They are part of our limiting belief structure. Words are a belief that something is something or is called something. It's a generalization, an abstraction of reality. It's like pointing out the sky to others and saying, "Look, stars!" But everybody's looking at the tip of your finger. Words are a cheap substitute for experience because they are abstractions. They're not the thing itself. Now, they're very useful for communicating. And they also have the problem that they're just pointers, not realities. Take the word dog. It's an abstraction of our experience with dozens or hundreds or thousands of actual living creatures, photographs of them, and all the names we know for types and breeds of dogs. Now, if you have a dog, you've given it a name, but even the name is just a pointer to the actual dog. The living dog has feelings and behaviors and actions. It has a unique personality. And you experience joy in your relationship with that unique individual. Now, of course, along with the work and trouble it brings to your life. So how do we talk about spirituality and use words which are only cheap substitutes for a direct experience? And how do we have a direct experience of God or soul or love or universe? Millions of people are trying by doing practices like the ones in Lifebook, meditation, yoga, prayer, depth psychology, following a religion, studying the great texts, hanging out with enlightened people, hoping that we get a taste. Here's a shocking comment. Every belief you have is actually an impediment to your spirituality. I'm going to say it again. Every belief you have is actually an impediment to your spirituality. Now, how does that feel? I'm called a belief clearing expert, and I focus on belief clearing because every time you clear a belief, you remove that impediment, that limitation, and you're a little closer to a direct experience of yourself and the world and your spirituality. We can only directly experience what's happening right now. You can think about what's happening right now, but now you're in thinking and not experiencing. You can do something right now, but we're usually thinking while we're doing. Gee, am I doing this right? Will they like it? Is it on straight? Does it make my butt look too big? Will I get a good grade? Is it acceptable? Am I acceptable? At that point, you're in the defensive ego self, not your true self, and your attention is fragmented. Part of you is concerned about what happened in the past. Another part is preparing for the future. And another part is actually doing what you're doing. Now, there's nothing wrong with this. You're human, except you miss out on the direct experience of now. And if you can clear your thoughts and beliefs about who you are, you can experience who you really are. If you can clear your thoughts and beliefs about God, you can experience God directly. That's the real power of now. I want to take you to your direct experience, which is unlimited. Strangely, I have to use words which are limited to do that. So try this as an experiment. Follow my words. I'm going to point to something. I'm going to take you on a journey. I'm going to direct your attention to something you may have overlooked. So let's begin this journey together. Stop. Just stop everything. Stop the thinking process. And when your mind starts up again, hold up your hand like a policeman at an intersection and say, stop. Or say what you'd say to your dog. Sit, stay. Stop moving your body. Now, your breath will continue to move inside of you, but don't try to control it or manage it. Just let your body breathe you. And let go of control. Notice all the ways you try to control yourself and others and your circumstances and even the world. Right now, let go of all that. I promise that the universe will continue to evolve and function even if you don't have your hands on the wheel. So allow everything to be what it is, as it is, without it needing to be under your control or different or needing it to change to please you. Drop all of that needing and let it just be. If you notice that you have thoughts, let your thoughts be there. Let them just be thoughts. They're mostly automatic machinery and they'll come and go even if you try to stop them. So just let them be and come and go. They don't mean anything. So just step away from them. Now, as the bumper sticker says, don't believe everything you think. In fact, don't believe anything you think. If you notice that you're having feelings and emotions, just let them be what they are, as they are, right now, without denying them or trying to change them or fix them or have different feelings or emotions. Allow them to be there just as they are. And don't believe anything you feel either. It's possible to experience emotions and feelings without adding meaning to them. For example, if you feel fear, just feel it in your body as a sensation without labeling it, and let the feelings move through you. Most feelings disappear within 60 to 90 seconds if you feel them fully. We covered this idea in an earlier broadcast. So just feel your feelings and don't add any mental chatter to them. Don't label them. Don't be concerned about them. Just let them be there. And allow your surroundings to be what they are, whether you're at home or in a coffee shop or walking on the street. Allow everything to be what it is, without judgment, without preferences. This is acceptance, and it produces equanimity, inner peace. Rest and relax into it. You can look out at the world with the eyes of a young child. Everything is so interesting. It's new, it's different, it's pretty, it's odd, and it doesn't have words attached to it yet. It is what it is, fascinating shapes and colors and materials and things. Your mind is probably quieter now. So direct your attention to what you're experiencing right now. Where is your body located in space and time? And what is it your body is experiencing? Can you feel the weight of your body on the chair or the floor or whatever you're touching? Can you feel your breath coming in and out of your nose and your throat and your lungs and your chest? Can you observe the thoughts that are coming and going from a place of silent observation? Notice whatever you're noticing and let it be what it is. This is your direct experience. Nothing is being labeled, nothing is being preferred, and nothing is being resisted. This is closer to what we would call your spiritual state. You are at the center of your experience. Try this out. Say to yourself, "This is me." Now say, "This is my experience." How does that feel? So the next question is, who are you? Who is doing the experiencing? I'd like you to gently turn your attention from your experience to the experiencer. Slowly and gently turn your attention in the other direction, inward. And with curiosity, face into the experiencer, the one who's doing the experiencing, with awe and wonder. There's no digging or thinking necessary. Simply look and face into your own self, which is alive and being itself and experiencing itself. This is you as the experiencer or the observer. This is also what we call a spiritual state. Now turn your attention outward again, as if you're facing all of creation around you. Open your eyes if they're closed and look around. Don't get distracted or attached to any one thing. See everything as simply objects made of matter, in different shapes and sizes and colors. Approach it like Data would on Star Trek. Interesting human creations. And notice that everything around you is made of matter, the atoms and molecules that are here on Earth. They're made of elements pulled out of the Earth. They were once part of Earth, and in a few million years they'll degrade back into the primary elements again. Turn your attention now to your body. You too are made of the Earth. You're made from the elements of the Earth, and you will also return to the Earth and get recycled back into the Earth at the end of your life. Feel yourself as part of the entire web of life that's been evolving for billions of years. This is you as Earth, as living matter. Now, recognize that your body is composed of about 60% water, just as the Earth is about 60% water. And think about the water cycle on Earth. The oceans evaporate, and the water becomes vapor, it forms clouds, which then grow and grow and move until they're too heavy, and then the water falls back to Earth in droplets as rain. And that rainwater finds its way through soil and over rocks, moving down through creeks and rivers and underground aquifers all the way to the ocean. It also finds its way into plants and animals, and we eat those plants and animals, and so their water becomes our water. And that water flows through our bloodstream and our organs, and then we eliminate what we don't need, and our wastewater then flows downhill ultimately to the ocean. So at every moment, you are part of this gigantic water cycle, and you are composed of water. Experience yourself as water. Take a deep breath and feel the air enter your lungs. And hold your breath for a few seconds and feel your heartbeat in your chest. Your lungs are extracting the oxygen molecules from the air and attaching them to hemoglobin molecules in your blood. And that oxygen is carried around through your entire body because your body needs that oxygen to fan the flame of life. If you're a typical human being around 70 kilograms or about 150 pounds, you have around 7 times 10 to the 27th atoms. That's a 7 followed by 27 zeros. Another way of saying this is 7 billion, billion, billion. And of this, almost 2/3 is hydrogen, and 1/4 is oxygen, both air components, and about 1/10 is carbon. and these three atoms add up to more than 95% of the total. After your hemoglobin delivers its package of oxygen to your cells, it picks up the carbon dioxide and hydrogen that you don't need, and it takes them back to your lungs, which you then breathe out. So after your next breath in, push out all of your air consciously as far as you can, and stop there at the end and hold your breath out. There's a moment of silence there, a still point, emptiness, before you take your next breath. You can hang out there and explore it for a while, and you can do this over and over between breaths. Your waste gas, the carbon dioxide that you give back into the air, is not actually waste. You're producing food for the plants and the trees. A tree or a plant accepts your carbon dioxide, and it uses sunlight to break that CO2 into C and O2, carbon and oxygen. It then stores the carbon in its body, and it breathes out what it doesn't need, which is the oxygen that you need. So strangely, trees are actually made of air. And when that tree falls and it's burned in your fireplace, the oxygen in the air is used to feed the fire. And what's happening is that the fire and the light it gives off, which is energy, is the result of the carbon in the wood combining back again with oxygen. And this chemical transaction releases energy, heat and light. And that energy was the original energy from the sun that the tree used to separate them. So the tree is also made of sunlight. And when you heat your house and the water in your house, you're using millions of years old sunlight in the form of fossil fuels and releasing it back into the environment. And so we're heating the Earth's atmosphere from the inside, burning stored sunlight. And of course, you are made of this energy, this fire of life itself. And without the energy needed to run the chemical transactions and the energy you give off by those chemical transformations, you'd be dead. You eat and breathe sunlight and earth and air and fire and water, and the life cycle keeps your body alive. So you are all of these elements, earth, water, fire, and air. This is you as the elements. So feel yourself as these components one at a time. Earth, the atoms and the molecules that are part of the earth. This is you as the elements. Feel yourself as these components one at a time. Say to yourself, I am Earth, and experience your atoms and molecules connected to all of the Earth's atoms and molecules. Now say, I am water, and experience yourself as part of this great cycle and movement of water around this planet. Now say, I am air. This is the atmosphere, the breath of all life breathing together. And say, I am fire. And experience your energy, trillions of chemical reactions happening in your body every second. You're glowing with this energy field. You give off light, which we call your aura. Not only that, but the electrical field of your heartbeat can be measured up to 20 feet away. And you're in the middle of a place with thousands or millions of people around you, all of whom have the same thing going on. So, who are you? All we know for sure is that you are a miracle. It's unfathomable, really. You're part of a great mystery that is life, and a universe bigger than we can imagine. Can you see that everything you believe about yourself is just a tiny fragment of this real reality? When you say, there's something wrong with me, that's probably true about a tiny fraction of you, but most of you is working absolutely beautifully. When you believe, I can't do it, you have to forget that you are a walking miracle, capable of doing anything you can imagine. Now, if someone else has ever done it ever in the history of the world, you can do it. And if no one else has done it before, which is unlikely, go out and do that. Be a pioneer, an innovator. If you believe I'm alone, or I don't belong, you have to ignore the fact that you are part of everything. Air, earth, fire, water, consciousness, other people, the evolution of animals on this planet. You are the very peak of evolution, the spear tip of millions of years of evolution. Now, of course, we think of ourselves as the top of the food chain, the latest and greatest form of humans ever. But when we stretch our minds to think of all time, 14 billion years in the past for this universe, and then stretch 14 billion years into the future, we're just in the middle somewhere of this grand experiment of cosmic proportions. What is spirituality? That was our original question. In my opinion, it is all of this. It is realizing that you as an individual are part of something much bigger than you can even imagine. And it comes when you remember and connect, not when you think about it or figure it out. Keep looking within to the experiencer that's having your experience. I can't tell you who you are, but you can discover it for yourself. And as I've tried to show you today, you are a living miracle at the center of a much bigger miracle, that the universe has evolved into us, animals that have consciousness, that can think and create tools to look into the furthest reaches of the universe, and the tools we can use to look into ourselves. Go look within. Meditate on these things. Feel them. And I'd love to hear your comments below on what you've found. Until next month, I wish you well on your path of awakening to who you really are as a creator of your life.